Before I begin, I have to tell you something. I am the most important one, even if nobody else knows about it. My name is Abinadab, and sadly, I am the second-born son of Jesse. The first-born son, Eliab, my older brother, he is older than me and stronger than me, but that's where it ends. I'm smarter than him. I am a harder worker than him. I am more creative than him, and I am way more pretty than him. Am I right, ladies? Of course. You know it. It's true. But I am just like you. Just like you in every other way. Well, more attractive. But other than that, I am just like the rest of you. I want to be acknowledged for the things that I do. I want people to like me just like the other guy. Well, actually, I want people to like me just a little bit more than the next guy, right? Let me ask you a question. What kind of leader does God work through? What kind of leader does God choose to work through? Of course, it's somebody like me. Someone who's intelligent, someone who's smart, someone who works hard. Or, let me tell you, it's a leader like King Saul. Oh, there is a leader that God could work through. Look at him. He is a head taller than the tallest person in Israel. And he is a fighter. I was with him when we fought against the Amalekites on our southern border. He is amazing. He is smart. He is intelligent. He is an awesome leader. Now, I know some of you heard that Saul and the prophet Samuel are not exactly on speaking terms right now. But you know what? I don't care about any of that. Because King Saul is the kind of leader I can get behind. One day, we were all working at my father Jesse's, and the old prophet Samuel himself came to my father. And he's so old. And he came and he said, "Gather all your sons, for God has rejected Saul as king. He will choose a new king from your children." So, my father lined up my brothers, six of us, from oldest to youngest. And you know how people start doing weird things when they're old? Samuel had this hollowed out horn filled with vegetable oil. And he said, "I shall anoint a new king with a horn in my oil." Okay, old man, keep your horn oiled yourself. So he lined us up from the oldest to the youngest. And as much as I hate to admit it, of course it was going to be Eliab. He fit the part. He looked the part. And so, the prophet Samuel took one look at my brother Eliab, and he got all excited, and he started walking towards Eliab with his horn. Old people are really slow. And then he took the stopper off his horn, and he raised up the horn, and he was about to pour his horny oil onto to my brother, and then he stopped. He put the stopper back in the horn, and then he walked away muttering something. "Ah, sheep bedtime, right in the pasture." I don't know, I couldn't hear, something like that. Then he started walking towards me. I smiled. He raised the horn. And he kept on going. It was like that for all seven of us. Until finally he got to the last one and he said to my father, "Yahweh has not chosen any of these to be the new king. Are these all the sons you have?" And my father said, "Well, there's the youngest, but he's out in the field watching the sheep doing children's work." And Samuel said, "Go get him. We shall not sit until he arrives." So my father went to go get him, and I thought, David. David? He was like 14, I think. And let me tell you, when I was his age, I was at least a foot taller than him. He was a scrawny little twerp. He was so weak and pathetic. He was not a warrior like me or my brothers or my father. He was a, how shall I put this politely, a musician. He was more in touch with his feelings than he knew about anything else in life. Certainly God couldn't use him. He was this little red-headed twerp. But the prophet said we had to wait until he arrived, so we just stood there. Do you know how hard it is to just stand in one place and do nothing? Do you know how hard it is to do that? I can work in the field all day without taking a single break. I can chop wood for hours without stopping. Single ladies, keep that in mind, all that hard work. It really makes a good husband. All right, just saying. But to just stand there and do nothing, it's exhausting. It's tiring. As we waited for David, what kind of leader does God choose to work through? Well, finally, the little strawberry runt shows up. And as soon as Samuel saw him, he started to cry. And Samuel approached David, and he unstopped his horn, and he anointed David in the name of Yahweh as the new king of Israel. Certainly not. Certainly not David. Our family was walking one day, and there was a dead sparrow on the side of the path. And David started to cry. No, he didn't start to cry. He started to weep over a pointless, pathetic dead sparrow. Come on. What kind of leader does God choose to work through? Not an overly sensitive musician who cries over dead sheep. And Samuel started to leave. And as he spent the next 8 hours moving away from us, I got to tell you, before I was kind of making fun of him for being old. I was only half kidding, but now I'm serious. When I saw him anoint David, I thought, he's gone crazy. He's senile. He doesn't know what he's doing. But he walked away from us, and then he turned around. Don't tell anyone about this. As soon as he was gone, my brother Eliab began laughing hysterically. And I ran over to him and threw myself at his feet. I said, "All hail the king of the sheep." And then my brother Elah said, No, the Lord of the lambs. Yes, all hail. And then my father Jesse said, "That's enough. Everyone go back to work." So we did. What kind of leader does God choose to work through? Certainly not someone like David. Certainly not someone like David. We all went back to work, but then things got really strange. The next thing I knew, King Saul summoned David to his home, to his palace. I don't know what the whole deal was, but apparently, did I tell you David played the harp? No. David played the harp. It's called a lute. Okay, it's a harp. He played the harp, and apparently because King Saul needed someone to comfort his spirit, I don't know what the whole deal is, he summoned him to his palace, and so David went to the palace for several months to play his harp for him. This didn't make any sense. Is this part of God's plan? It made zero sense. But then the Philistines invaded. The Philistines invaded, and David was sent home. The Philistines came into the Promised Land, and Eliab, myself, and Shema, we enlisted in the Israel army. We went to the Valley of Elah, and there King Saul was with his general Abner and the army of Israel. We lined up in battle formation on the far side of the valley on top of the hill. And on the other side, the Philistines lined up. There were more of them than us. And worse yet, they had chariots with them, the most horrifying weapon of war I had ever seen or the world had ever known. Fortunately, they were useless on our side of the valley. So we just stayed there. And they outnumbered us, so there was no way that we were going to go and attack them and be cut down by their chariots, so it was a standoff. So as we stood there the first morning, us on our side of the valley in battle formation, them on their side in battle formation as they were trying to invade God's promised land, the land of Israel, about midday, this man came out, and he was carrying a shield, and he walked to the middle of the valley. And this wasn't an ordinary shield. It was this massive shield. It was taller than I was. It was huge. It was like the size of a door. And then we heard this bellow, this deep guttural bellow from the back of the Philistine lines. And in just a few strides, this monster of a man came and stood beside the shield bearer. And he was just huge. He must have been 9 to 10 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet, a bronze breastplate, bronze leggings, bronze gauntlet. He had this massive sword strapped to his back, and he held this spear that the width of it was like larger than most trees. And he stood there, and he called out to us as he held that spear in his hand. And he said, "Why do you line up in battle formation? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose among you a man to come and fight me. If he kills me, we will be your servants. But if I kill him, you will serve us and be our servants." I don't remember how long we waited. Minutes? Maybe an hour? But nobody moved. There was no sound in the army of Israel. And finally, he said, "Will no one come and face Goliath? Did your nursemaids never teach you how to gird up your loins like a man? Come and fight me." He pointed his spear at us. "Who among you will fight me? Come, do battle with me. Kill me and you will be free." Now, I am not a coward, but I'm also not an idiot. So I didn't volunteer. But I didn't see anyone else volunteering either. And so it was like that. For 40 days, every morning, we would line up in formation on our side of the valley. The Philistines would line up there. Goliath would come out with his shield bearer. He would taunt us. He would ridicule us and our God. And no one did anything. Who could defeat a monster like that? He was massive. He was huge. No one wanted to go. No one volunteered. It was a standoff for 40 days, but their armies were much, much more massive than ours, and so it was only a matter of time before they found a way to penetrate deeper into God's promised land, into Israel. One day, well, fortunately, my father, Jesse, sent David to us every few days. He would bring us bread and cheese so that we'd have something to eat, and I was thankful for that. It was better than most of the men fared. But one day, David happened to be there while Goliath came out. We lined up in our formation. They lined up in theirs. Goliath came out with his shield bearer and began to taunt us yet again. And he said, "By Dagon, the armies of your God are all weak and pathetic. You serve an idiot God with idiots as followers. He is a canker in the pantheon of the gods. He is pathetic, and you are all foul lumps of deformity. Fight me! Fight me! Eat or be eaten!" He took a step forward, and I ran, and half the army ran back to the camp with us. And as we ran back to our camp, I could hear his bellowing laughter fill the valley. When I got back to camp, I heard David talking to one of the soldiers. And little David said to him, "What will be done for the man who defeats this monster? And who is this uncircumcised Philistine who dares to mock the army of the living God?" And one of the soldiers said, "Well, King Saul promised the man who defeats Goliath that he will never have to pay taxes again, that he will have riches and the hand of his daughter in marriage." Now, I had seen King Saul's daughter, and she was pretty enough. but she wasn't that pretty. Certainly not with risking your life over, and certainly not worth dying for. Just then, Eliab came out of nowhere, and he shoved David hard in the chest. And David tried to stand up, and Eliab shoved him to the ground again. And he says, "What are you doing here? Why aren't you out watching your little sheep? I know your wicked little heart. You just came out to see the battle." And I thought David was going to cry. But he managed to hold it all together. And he said, "It's just a question. What's wrong with you?" He was so pathetic. David got up and he scrambled away from Eliab. And Eliab went one way. And David kept going through the camp. And he kept asking about who this Goliath was and what would be done for the man who defeated him. And he kept asking. So much, it must have reached the ear of King Saul, and King Saul summoned him to come talk. And before Saul could get out a single word, David said to him, "My king, no one should be discouraged about this uncircumcised Philistine. Your servant will go and defeat him." And Saul said, "David, you are just a musician, a shepherd, a child, really. And Goliath, he has been training for war since before he was your age. How can you defeat him?" And David looks Saul right in the eye. And he says, "Since I was a little boy, I have watched over my father's flock. And whenever a bear or a lion would come and take one of the lambs in its mouth, I would go after it, strike it down with my staff, and take the lamb from its mouth. And if a bear or a lion reared up against me, I would strike it dead. So too will be this uncircumcised Philistine, this uncircumcised monster. Yahweh, the God who lives, delivered me from the mouth of the lion and the bear, and he will deliver me from the hand of this giant." Did I tell you David was a storyteller too? I think some of Samuel's craziness was wearing off on him. Because I just watched Eliab knock him flat on his butt. And Goliath, Saul was a whole head taller than any of us. And Goliath was 3 head taller than Saul. And he thinks that he could go and defeat him. It made no sense. No way. It's not going to happen. But then King Saul agreed, and he started trying to put his own armor onto tiny little half-naked David. I couldn't believe it. Everyone had lost their mind. Everyone was crazy. Everybody was crazy in Israel. Samuel was crazy. David was crazy. King Saul was crazy. And I was just crazy for being there. And you and you and you and you and you are all crazy just for listening to this. Everyone lost their mind in Israel. King Saul's armor didn't fit on David, obviously. So with just his shepherd's staff and his sling, he went down to the dried up riverbed in his half-naked tunic. Clothes fit only for a small child. And he found 5 smooth stones and placed them in his pouch. And before I really realized what was happening, David walked past the line of the Israel army. He went down into the valley and stood before Goliath and his shield bearer. As soon as Goliath saw him, he laughed. "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" He hit his shield bearer on the back hard, and the shield bearer almost fell over, but he was laughing too. And then the Philistines were laughing all behind them. Then Goliath's voice boomed and filled the valley. He said, "You haven't sent me a warrior, you sent me a sacrifice. I curse you, boy. I curse you. And on this day in Sheol, Dagon and Asheroth and Baal will feed on your flesh, grind your bones into nothing, and feed on your organs. I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky on this day." I wanted to run. I wanted to run away. Not just back to camp, but I just wanted to leave. But I couldn't. That was my brother. And then David spoke. And his voice didn't boom like Goliath's did, but the valley carried his voice up to us so we could hear him well enough. And he said to him, "You come at me with a dagger, sword, and a spear, but I come against you in the name of Yahweh, the God of Israel's armies. Today he will hand you over to me. Today I will strike you down. Today I will cut off your head and feed the corpses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the animals of the ground. Today the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. Today this whole assembly will know that God does not deliver by sword or spear, but the battle belongs to the Lord. He will hand you over to us." And then Goliath charged. He ran faster than I thought humanly possible. And as he ran, the shield bearer had a hard time keeping up, but he did. And David took his shepherd's staff and he threw it to the side and he took out one stone and put it into his sling and started to swing. As soon as he started swinging, the shield bearer jumped in front of Goliath. And Goliath and them ran in unison. Goliath picked up his massive spear. And David began going to the right and to the left. And as he did, the shield bearer kept moving and adjusting so David couldn't get a shot. And as they approached, Goliath raised up his spear and was about ready to skewer David like a helpless little lamb. And then David released his sling. And it hit. It hit him right in the forehead. The giant just fell face forward. The shield bearer saw what happened, threw his shield and ran back for the Philistine line. And David didn't stop. He climbed on top of the giant. He took the sword off of his back and he thrust it through his ribcage into his heart. Then he took the sword and he chopped off the giant's head, lifted it up, and showed it to the Philistine army. As soon as they saw the head of Goliath, they all began to run. And as they ran, the armies of Israel and Judah went after them and cut them down and defeated them and ran them out of the promised land. After the battle back at camp, I overheard King Saul ask his general Abner, "Abner, remind me again, who is this boy's father? Does he pose a threat to my throne?" Now the truth is that my father is a great man, but he's a nobody. But as I heard them that day, I found myself thinking, one day, he will be a threat to your throne. And then I realized that's why God told Samuel to anoint David as the king of Israel. God chose David not because of his size, not because of his intelligence, not for any other reason, other than that God knew that David would trust God to defeat Goliath. He knew that David would trust him in his heart to defeat Goliath. None of us, no one in all of Israel's armies trusted God that enough, not even King Saul. But David trusted in his heart that God could overcome the monster. God knew that David feared God more than he feared man, even giant ones. What kind of leader does God choose to work through? God chooses the kind of leader who will trust him in his heart. God chooses the kind of leader. God uses men and women who God knows will trust him. God chooses the kind of leaders. He works through the kind of leaders who will rely on his strength and his power and not their own. There are many leaders in this world. There are many leaders in this world, but the ones that God works through are those who rely on his strength and not their own. There is always, no matter what kind of leader you are, there's always going to be someone who is stronger and bigger, except God. No one is stronger than God. If you want to be the kind of leader that God works through, in your home, in your family, in your neighborhood, in your jobs, in your careers. If you want to be the kind of leader that God works through in your community, amongst your friends, even amongst your enemy. If you want to be the kind of leader that God works through, it doesn't matter how strong or weak you are. It doesn't matter what your gender is. It doesn't matter how experienced you are or what your education is or where you're from or what you look like or how attractive you are or how smart you are or how creative you are. If you want to be a leader who God works through. It starts in the heart. It starts in the heart when people trust him. If you want to be a leader, trust God with your heart.